Thank you, Steve. Great job today on the news.
Well, thank you, Billy Boy.
Fantastic job
on the news.
Means a lot
coming from you.
Mary, the traffic was sparkling.
Oh, thank you so
absolutely,
much, Bill.
Absolutely.
Did you not shower again today?
No, I showered today.
Oh.
Today was my day to shower. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. Wendy will be in later.
She signed a new contract or something?
Yeah, it's getting to be a little...
See, what happens is when they put together a lineup is they say to the hosts, your show will start at 10. And much the same way if you're driving on a highway and you see a speed limit that says 55, everyone's not doing 55. Some people are going over. Some people are going under.
So it's a suggestion?
Yeah.
I see.
A suggestion that, come on in around 10 and we'll do the show. Right. And, you know, it's not in concrete.
And it builds up a little, anticipation. We wouldn't miss her if she was here.
People get excited. They say...
So Wendy is coming?
Yeah.
What are you trying to say, Bill?
She'll be in later. She's not here now. I'll look over at the door and she's not here now. But later on... I'd put a couple bucks down on the fact that she will join the show later on. In progress.
Does she pay you when she's not in?
No.
Do you get a little extra or something?
Nope.
Something that she would have picked up had she been here?
Compensation remains the exact same.
Even Steven.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not higher. It's not lower. It's the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it should be.
Does she owe you dinner?
No. Nothing like that.
Maybe she'd make you dinner. You can go over.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that. I don't think anyone needs
She's
that.
She's a good cook.
I've been told that. For people who don't know what we're referring to, sometimes Wendy will bring in a food that she's made at the house, and I never eat it. And the reason is she's one of those people who has a dog and touches the dog a lot. And I can't enjoy food knowing somebody's been handling the dog a lot and handling food. Is that irrational?
You don't think she's washed her hands since she made
nope.
the dinner?
I don't think she's washed her hands since I've met her.
Or showered or anything?
No, she's showered, but I don't think she's washed her hands in years.
Get out the Clorox wipes. You can deal with that.
So when she makes food, I take out a Clorox wipe and just...
Wipe it down.
Wipe down the food.
It won't taste any different.
These brownies are fantastic. A little soapy. Just a little on the soapy side, but manageable. All right, so here's what's coming on. In addition to the addition of Wendy at some point during today's show, sometime between now and noon, Wendy will stop in. You'll see. I already mentioned this during the crosstalk, but it certainly bears repeating because I can't wait to meet this girl. I saw her online, and I love the idea of this. Michelle Poehler will be with us at 10:35. She has a project called 100 Days Without Fear, in which, for 100 consecutive days, she battled something she's afraid of. Now, the first thought is, and I had this exact same thought, that's a lot of things to be afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And for most of us, you can probably name a half a dozen things that you're kind of scared of. But believe me when I tell you, like, the more I thought about this, because there's a couple, I mentioned needles a little while ago. I'm deathly afraid of needles. There's a bunch of stuff that's kind of on the periphery for me. Like, I'm really not great with heights, you know? If I'm up on somebody's balcony, I've been with people that can walk right over to the balcony and hang over it and look down and stuff. I have a very hard time doing that sort of thing.
I was just at a business breakfast and, you know, the networking thing where people just walk up and talk to each other.
Yeah.
I am unable to do that.
Oh, I'm shocked about that for you.
Why?
You're afraid
really?
Of people?
I'm not afraid of people, but it's just not in my DNA to walk up and say... Sometimes I'll go up and say, hi, I'm Bill Leff, just to break the ice.
Does that work? That can't work.
It hasn't worked yet.
No.
I think it will one day.
But now, if it's people you know, you're not reticent at all. You'll just walk right up and talk. But if they're strangers, is that where it comes
in, just
Steve?
Not good at small talk with people I don't, networking things.
Really?
So, right. So I memorized the view out of the window of the office building I was in. The Merchandise Mart top floor is beautiful. You can see the river.
Really?
So, yeah, that would be one of my things. I would have tackled that.
Last week, as my family and I were on vacation in Mexico, we were up on the 8th floor of a building, and the way that they had their balcony set up is they had, instead of railings or something, some sort of a barrier at the end, it was all completely glass. It was unbroken glass from the start to the finish. It just kind of wrapped around. It was glass. And everyone else in my family could easily walk to the very edge and look over. And it was impossible for me to do that. I just couldn't do it. And it was harder at night. I don't know why. In the daytime, it was difficult. I could kind of very slowly addle up to the end of it. But in the for some reason, other parts of the day and night, I couldn't do it. I don't know why it is. Mayor, do you have something like that? Is there something you're afraid of?
Mice.
Is it mice?
I'm deathly afraid of mice. I just can't. Any rodent at all.
Anything. Did you have an incident or two, or is it just the idea of it all?
No, I just don't like them. I don't think we've most had any in our house.
But most people don't like them, right?
Is
yours more a fear or a dislike?
It's like a jump on the counter fear. If I see it scurrying around the floor, I will jump on the counter.
Better or worse with rats?
Oh, the same.
The same exact.
If I see him on Lower Wacker.
Yes.
I run for
it. Yes.
It's awful. Yeah, they're nasty. And the weird thing, I don't care about snakes or spiders. I'll deal with them.
But a mouse or a rat does you in. Have you had one? Have you ever had one in your house, ever?
Oh, yes.
And what happens when that happens?
I almost moved out once.
No, I get that. I totally get that.
Yeah, and I my husband knows, and he puts traps everywhere, and so he will like one morning he actually woke up before me, because I have to get up, you know, way before him.
Yeah,
he went and checked the mouse traps before I left for work, because he knew I would freak out if I went downstairs and saw one in there alive.
When Terry and I lived in an apartment. When we got married, and our neighbors across the hall had a bunch of birds, like five birds. And the whole time we lived there, about 3 years, we didn't see a single mouse. But when those people moved out, for some reason, there were mice everywhere. And it was explained to me is that the food from the birds would often fall out of the cage, and any mice that were in the building were in their apartment eating that, you know, bird food. But as soon as that food supply was used up,
yeah,
they were everywhere. So we went from in 3 years never seeing a single mouse to, after our neighbors moved out, within a month we saw six or seven mice. It could have been the same mouse, I doubt it. But every time we walked across a hall or something, you'd hear one or see one. And like you said, we were ready to move out just based on the fact that there was a mouse in the building. That was enough for us. We couldn't deal with it.
Aren't you curious about them, though? I mean, I kind of enjoy seeing them, like watching them. If they're in the garage or the shed.
Yeah, if they're outside and I see one, I'll take a good long look, because they're very curious creatures, but not in the same living space as me.
A long time ago, Bill, I used to have a bird feeder like across our driveway.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the winter, the birds are out there. And then I see the mice running to the below the feeder and then eating and then running back toward the house. I'm like, wait a minute.
They're taking the food and bringing it back inside the house.
This is takeout. I'm not going to do that anymore.
They're so sneaky, and they're so little they can get in any little holes.
Right. And they seem to have the attitude, they know that we don't want them around. Like, just the way, when they see you, they have that look like, all right, we see each other. We know you don't want me here.
Smart. And the worst thing is, I don't like cats at all, but I know cats would alleviate the mice problem, but I can't deal
cats.
With either one of
no,
them.
No, I know.
Like,
I know. It's not pleasant. All right, well, Michelle Poehler will be with us at 10:35. 100 Days Without Fear is the name of her project. She also has a website with that same name. We'll talk to her. Dean Richards will be by to talk movies. I want to talk to him about Woody Allen. There's been some interesting stories that have kind of lingered from the last couple of years, mostly about his daughter, Dylan, and now actors who have worked with Woody Allen in the recent past are saying that they're sorry they ever worked with him and handing in their paychecks. It's gotten pretty out of hand. We'll talk about that with Dean. A lot of other stuff. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy later on WGN. It's Bill F. Wendy is on her way. She's en route. She'll be here later on in the day. Steve and Mary are hanging out. A couple of quick things before we get the actual show rolling. Thing number one is this. Yesterday on the bonus hour on the stream, you know, from 12 to 1, Wendy and I go upstairs and we do the show online only for an hour. We were talking about this family, the Turpin family in California, which is really just as bizarre a story as you could ever want to find.
They should be in court today, I believe.
Today they are going to be in court.
Right.
You're absolutely right. So there's been several revelations about the family. Every day we hear more and more things, each of them creepier than the next. I guess the biggest things that have happened in the last 24 hours with the story is that we hear that the children, the 13 children, the Turpin children, were only allowed to eat once per day and to shower twice a year. That's it. Very, very peculiar. Here's the question that I have, and Steve, I honestly don't know the answer to this. Maybe you do, Mary, you do. The last several days, as the stories about them have mounted in the papers, they show Mr. and Mrs. Turpin, David Allen Turpin, and his wife, Louisa Anna Turpin. And anytime the children were shown, their faces were blurred. This has been going on for days. Today, nearly every news source that has stories about them show the parents as they have all week long. But when they show the Turpin children, the faces are no longer blurred. Did something happen in the last 24 hours that would change that? I'm very confused as to why that would happen.
I don't know the answer to that. The only thing that might change it would be if the government published the pictures.
So once the government publishes it,
I don't know. I mean,
that opens it up. You can show them. The reason the faces are blurred, they always say, is to protect the identities of the children.
Does it matter their age, Steve? If they were over 18 or whatever, they could show them and not the younger ones?
Well, I mean, and some of them were adults, right?
So, yes. They were up to 29.
In their 20s.
And you could show crime victims. I don't know the answer to it, Bill. I haven't been following it that closely.
Did you notice the same thing I noticed, though?
Followed it.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Yeah, I didn't look at today's pictures, but yesterday they were still blurred.
Always blurred up until this morning when Yahoo was the first source that I saw it on, and then I went to a couple of other news sources because I was looking for stories about them. And in almost every case, the same pictures that had been blurred the last several days no longer blurred, and I can't figure out why.
Are they blurred? Are they pictures of them as victims or as children?
It's the pictures that you've seen a couple times, like when the family goes to Disneyland.
Oh, I see them now. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, they're shown. This was like when they renewed their vows.
Right.
Their faces are now shown. Yesterday, they were not.
Right.
That is very odd.
So what happened overnight that all of a sudden all these news sources at the same time decided, well, we've been blurring the faces, but at this point, it's okay to show them. I have no idea what changed. Hmm. It's very peculiar. All right, a couple other quick things. I neglected yesterday to talk about this, and then on the way home I thought about it, and I was mad at myself. The great Betty White turned 96 years old yesterday. Wouldn't you put Betty White in that bracket of people that it's almost, if not impossible, to not love, right? There's only a couple right. people that are in that group.
I don't know who wouldn't like her.
Who in their right mind, if you mentioned Betty White, would go, ugh, Betty White. The worst. It's impossible. You have to admire Betty White. She's 96 years old. She's not only still working, she's hysterically funny and incredibly gifted. I found this out about her yesterday. I found this thing called littlethings.com all about Betty White. Did you know that she's the oldest person to ever host Saturday Night Live?
I did not know that.
She is. I'm trying to find the exact story about that. And it's interesting the way she got it. There was some sort of an online campaign for her to host the show. There were people who were fans of hers who said, hey, you've had so many hosts over the years that we haven't been thrilled with. How about Betty White? The woman's been in show business for 65 or 70 years. Put Betty White on as host of Saturday Night Live. And they finally followed suit. And she was on a couple years ago and did a great job. She was hysterically funny. She also holds the record for the longest TV career for a female. Betty holds, this is according to littlethings.com, Betty holds the record, the Guinness Book of World Records, for the longest TV career a female has ever had, starting all the way back in 1939 when she danced on an experimental West Coast TV show. Steve, that's the first time I saw you was in a similar situation.
Well, you know what made it experimental was... No. I'm not going to say.
No, don't say.
Right.
Leave that up to the imagination of the listener. She's been married one time. Do you know who to whom?
Alan Ludden.
Alan Ludden.
The password is?
Love.
Longevity. Or if you wait long enough, you'll come back.
But she worked constantly. She's still working.
Oh, if you look at her career, like with a lot of the long-term careers, there's ebbs and flows. Betty White from day one was working solid and just never let up.
Can you imagine her residuals she must get?
Oh, she's got, well.
I mean, well, up until a certain year.
Well, it's funny you say that because one of these fun facts about Betty White really struck me. Like, I never thought of her as being a rich woman. She just seems very accessible to me. Like she's the kind of person you see every single day. She's not like a big rich movie star, TV star type. Her net worth as of today is over $45 million.
Wow.
So that's fantastic.
It's got
to
be.
So to your point, yeah, she did really well with residuals. And most of her career, the whole first half of her career was before they established residual payments.
Right.
You know?
Right.
James Garner got that done sometime in the 70s. Until then, you'd do a show or something and they could run it forever. You wouldn't make a nickel on it.
But wait, she went through about 20 years of downtime, didn't she? I mean,
Not
Hot
really.
In Cleveland came back. What was before Hot in Cleveland?
Golden Girls.
Yeah, she did Golden Girls.
Okay, but that was 20 years ago.
85 to 92. Then okay. Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore was before Golden Girls.
Yeah, that was right. 70 to 77. Betty White Show, 77, 78. Mama's Family. Remember, she was
I know, but so from 92 to Hot in Cleveland.
All right.
It's kind of quiet.
So there, yeah.
So that's, that's 15, 20 years.
But she will still do, like, all during that thing. She would do TV specials. You know, she'd show up on stuff. You'd see her on talk shows.
She was always on Password.
Always on Password.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she and at that point, Mayor, she must have been married to Alan Ludden during those visits to Password, right?
I would assume.
Right? Then she'd have to be.
She was married to him from 63 to 81, I believe.
Yeah. He died in, was it 1981 that Alan Ludden died?
I think they were still married when he died.
He was one of the best, in my opinion anyway, game show hosts because he just, he had an attitude about him. Not like, I mentioned this about Trebek. You know how when Trebek is doing Jeopardy, even though you know he doesn't really know the answer, he acts like he does because it's been given to him. So he'll say, no, the War of 1812 and have that look on his face like, I knew this, you didn't know this. You didn't get any of that with Alan Ludden. He seemed genuinely surprised at the right answers. I like that in a talk show, in a
like
game
a nice
show host.
Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. We are joined right now by my friend and coworker Wendy Snyder. Hello, Wendy.
Hi, Bill. Hi. If you're the last person on earth, I am never feeding you a meal. I am never cooking for you. I am never doing
Don't say
anything.
That.
Wendy.
What if that happens?
I will not do that.
What if that actually happens now? There's proof that you did. That you saw a starving Bill and
nope.
you didn't help.
Nope. And...
Has he really never eaten anything you've brought in?
I love to cook, and I'm a decent cooker, as my kids call me. And I would bring things in, and Kevin Richter, our producer, would be like, oh, a stuffed pepper? Yeah, I'll take that. Cream of chicken soup? Yeah, I'll take that. I'm like, sorry, Bill, I know you don't like cream of chicken soup. He's like, no, I just don't like your soup. I said, why? Because you have a dog. I said, so do like 80% of the people listening. And I wash my hands 100 times. There is never dog hair anywhere.
I need to see hardcore evidence of that. I need to see
I'm
a full
make you
log.
Dog hair soup. That's what I'm going to do.
I would, ironically, that would be the one thing. If you brought in dog hair soup, I go, I don't like dog. I don't like dog hair, but this is
but
pretty
this is
good
yummy.
Soup.
At least
this is really good.
Because you wouldn't worry about it. You'd know.
Right. There's no
true.
Mystery involved with dog hair soup. If there's not dog hair in it, you go, oh, this you'd skimped.
You see what they do with their dog hair? There's no dog hair in there.
Mary, do you have a pet in your house?
No, but I have grand dogs that are over all the time. They're
because
oh,
you
lot.
Eat everything Mary bakes.
I check Mary's schedule of when the dogs are over. I say, okay, there's not been a dog in the house for 6 days. I can have some cookies.
Bertrand, no. Do you have a dog?
Yeah, but not for much longer.
I know. My dog's getting to that point.
That sounded grim.
They're on their last leg.
Yeah, she's fading.
Oh, that sounded
Isn't
so
that
grim.
Sad?
It's terrible.
Oh, no. Are you all right with that, Steve?
Well, no, it's just be
as
sad.
Good as you can be.
Right. She's, yeah. you know, she, I don't know how long she's got, but we are, can't wait to replace the carpeting.
I am so with you there. And can I just tell you, it's like dogs, pets that you love never just go on their own. I just wish, and it's sad, but I wish I would just find Tiki dead. Instead of having to put him down.
Yeah, no one right. saw the conversation going this way.
No, but no, we were right. talking about... Before you
Seriously.
Came in, Wendy, a pleasant conversation about Alan Ludden.
That's what
I do. Right. A very nice Alan Ludden conversation, and now it's you hope your dog dies.
No, I don't hope he does, but you know what I mean? Like, I wish they'd just go on their own.
Right. Yeah. You don't want the trauma of
yeah.
bringing
right.
them in, and oh, I can't imagine
Will you get
that.
Another one when this dog dies, Steve? Will you get another, or are you done?
I don't think we will.
You're done.
I would think so, but really? I can't.
What about another animal? What about a porpoise or something?
Well, we have a skunk already in
do
the backyard,
you?
So we'll probably... Keep the skunk.
A dolphin.
Right.
Poor
Please, everybody know that was Wendy. Please
it
know
was
that.
Not.
Please know that.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Please. All right. Let's take a quick break. Steve has the news. And then on to happier subjects. I'm hoping. I'm praying. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You know how to reach us. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there or text us there. Our guest right now is Michelle Poehler. And Michelle, I just want to tell you, I don't say this to all the guests. I admire you so much because you took something, you took a series of fears, and you didn't just live with them. You did something about it. And good for you. Hi, how are you?
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, go to the start of this. I know we're going back to 2015 when this all began, but talk about your campaign, your 100 Days Without Fear. Well, how did this all start?
So I moved to New York a few months before I started the project, and I realized that I could not live in New York and stay in my comfort zone. And it was very painful to try to, you know, avoid fears while living in that city, which is not for fearful people. And I had two options. I could stay in New York and actually face my fears, or go back to where I come from. And I wanted to stay so bad. I decided to face 100 fears in 100 days as part of a school project that I was I had to do for a master's that I was doing in branding.
All right. Now, we all have some fears, and a lot of them are similar. Like, I'm afraid to jump out of an airplane. I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. I noticed you did. I have an irrational fear of tornadoes, but a lot of people are afraid of tornadoes. I don't know if I have 100 fears, though. How did you come up with 100?
So the way I classify this is not only about things that you're afraid of, but things that you're uncomfortable doing. So it is constantly about pushing your comfort zone. And that's how I would decide which fears to do. Because giving free hugs in the middle of Times Square is not that it's, you know, like, oh, that's my big fear. It's not that it is uncomfortable. So let me try it. Or posing nude in front of a drawing class. It's not like I'm going to die. You know, I'm not at risk, but it's so uncomfortable. So that's what I was doing for 100 days, just pushing my comfort zone.
Michelle, out of the 100, did you conquer all 100, or were there some that you just couldn't pull off?
Well, I faced 100. I did not overcome 100 fears. So it was like shock therapy where I exposed myself to the fear for one time, and then the next day I would do something different. So it's not like I am now comfortable doing, you know, posing nude in front of a drawing class or doing stand-up comedy or holding a tarantula. I'm not comfortable, but at least I tried that. I can say that I did, and I can now make a decision if I like it or if I don't.
You know, we all like routine, it seems. Like, I like knowing when I come to my job every day, you know, I park in the same spot, it's the same commute. But there's something about going out of your comfort zone that makes it, yes, uncomfortable, but on the other hand, much more exhilarating. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, what I believe is that if every day we do something that is outside of our comfort zone, we will be creating memories. And memories make our life feel longer. Because when you look back, you see all these new things you did on your daily basis, and you're like, whoa, I've been doing a lot of things. But if you do the same thing, right, your routine, every single day, when you look back, you're like, whoa, it's December already? What happened to my year?
That's true.
Of the 100, Michelle, are there some that even now you look back on and you go, wow, what was I thinking? That's something I really shouldn't have touched.
Not really. I'm actually glad I did all of them. And I keep doing the same thing. My life now is all about trying new things every single day and then making a decision if I like it or if I not. And you can be surprised of the things that you may enjoy and you had no idea.
So you still do this, even though the 100 days without fear is over, you still challenge yourself. You continue to challenge yourself and say, here's something I'm not really good with. I can do this. You're still doing that, huh?
Yeah, actually, I became a motivational speaker and I talk about this every single day and to a different audience. And if I talk about this, I have to, you know, do as I preach. So I have to keep facing my fears, creating new stories, new memories, and sharing this online to keep inspiring people on a daily basis.
All right. On your list of fears, one of them is holding a cat. Why are you afraid of cats?
I lived with two cats for a semester in college, and they made my life impossible. Like, hell, I would not touch the cats, and my life would be around, like, oh, if the cat is in the bathroom, then I may wait for them to get out. So for this challenge, I was like, I have to do all those things that I once said I would never do, like touch a cat. So I did it. I held a cat, and it was not as bad as I thought, and I felt really ridiculous for not doing that while I was living with cats before.
But Michelle, you know this, cats spend the majority of their day plotting ways to kill you.
No,
you know that,
they do,
right?
Not
exactly.
What was the reaction from family and friends who have known you forever? I don't know if you consider yourself normally a fearful person, but when you told them you were embarking on this, you're going to tackle 100 fears, what was their reaction?
They were so happy for me. Everybody I know was pushing me to do this, except except for my mom. My mom is extremely fearful. So when I told her about this, she was like, no, don't. I don't want you to die in the process and whatever. So I couldn't even tell her the fears before facing them. I had to tell her after. That was a rule.
All right, I'm confused on number 8 on your list of fears as well, smoke. So you didn't smoke and you did smoke for your list? I'm confused.
I never tried any kind of substance before that could mess with my brain, my system, anything. Like, I'm a very control freak, so I was like, I'm not letting go. And, you know, smoking or drinking are things that, you know, manipulate your brain. And yeah. I was afraid of that, so I never tried it before. Yeah.
You mentioned that now, Michelle, you are a motivational speaker. You also mentioned that one of your fears that you tackled was stand-up comedy. One of the biggest fears for everybody is always speaking in public. I have no idea why, but that's always a top fear. What was it about those things, speaking in public, either as a TED Talk speaker or as a stand-up comic? What was it that made you so nervous?
Well, I think that we can all relate to the fear of being in front of people and then maybe blank out, forget what you have to say next. Say a joke that no one understands or no one really laughs about that. So I feel that paralyzes us. And what I realize is that when we have a message, we can't allow the fear to come in the way. We have to get over our fears and stand on that stage and deliver that message, because we can change lives if we face our fear. So that's what I'm doing now, facing that fear every single day.
And, you know, some of the things, like I mentioned, that we're afraid of, too, like cliff diving, skydiving. But, you know, this is something that I would never have thought of, but this would scare the crap out of me, is to crash someone's wedding. You just walk into someone's wedding that you don't know. That was pretty uncomfortable, wasn't it?
It was uncomfortable, but the worst part was that I almost get sued for doing that, which
Why?
I was not expecting.
What happened?
The family, after a week of that, after I published the video, The family found out, and they were suing the hotel, and the hotel, they were calling me, asking me to take all the videos down if I don't want to get in trouble. But that became scarier, yes.
And then you could add another thing on your list, is counter-sue someone.
Right, that's easy.
Yeah.
Your list, I noticed donate blood. Was the fear there the same fear that I have? Was it needles, or was there something a little more deep-rooted than that?
Oh, definitely needles, yeah. And it's... another fear that I faced similarly was getting a piercing, which was also facing needles. So when I faced, when I was going to donate blood, what I realized is that these kind of fears were, there was a pattern. And that's when I realized I didn't have 100 fears like I thought. I actually had 7 fears, and pain is one of them.
But that's, I know there are rational fears and irrational fears, but a fear of pain seems as rational can be, although a needle really only causes a very limited amount of pain. So that one's tricky, isn't it?
It is. And at the end, I feel, you know, fears, the fears that are limiting our life are pretty irrational. Like the fear of embarrassment, of rejection, they're not going to kill us. And still, we stop doing so many things that we actually want to do because we're afraid of those thing.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's great advice, really. And somebody just texted, you know, if I hear this comfort zone thing once again, I've spent my entire life trying to get in a comfort zone. Leave me alone. And there's something to be said for your safe routine. I mean,
sure.
We all feel comfortable, but I don't know. I just feel like sometimes you become a better person. Maybe if you are, you know, trying to be funnier, if you step out of your comfort zone, you get funnier. If you're trying to be an artist and you step out of your comfort zone, you're a better artist.
Yeah, for sure. That's what my goal is, to expand my comfort zone as much as possible. And what I say is that the more uncomfortable you get, the greater the reward.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true.
Probably my formula, yeah.
I'm going to take a different route home from work
do
today.
Do it, Wendy. Do I'll it. I challenge you. Michelle Poehler is our guest, creator of 100 Days Without Fear. Great project at 100dayswithoutfear.com. Michelle, really quickly, what's the advice you would give somebody if somebody goes, I don't think I can knock out 100 fears, but there's 3 or 4 or 5. What's the one universal thing that you can tell them that will help them?
So the one thing I do now, you know how when we are about to face a fear, and you're thinking about it, you ask yourself, what's the worst that could happen? And
yeah.
That question is just so wrong, because it gives us the, we start thinking of all the possible things that can go wrong in our life. When we face that fear, we take that risk. So my suggestion is to ask yourself, what's the best that can happen? Because that way, when you change the question, you will be thinking about all the possible rewards. And focusing on the rewards is the one thing that will motivate us to actually take action.
What's so next for you? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
what's next for you, Michelle?
So right now I'm working on my book that will be publishing hopefully this year, and working on an online course that we will be putting out there, and just keep building the speaking business, which we're now getting into schools and speaking around the world.
Excellent.
Companies.
Very, very inspirational. Mm-hmm. Michelle Poehler is her name. She's the creator of 100 Days Without Fear. Go to that website, 100dayswithoutfear.com, if you'd like to learn more. Keep up the good work, Michelle. We're proud of you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Michelle.
Very nice.
What are you going to do out of your comfort zone today?
Nothing.
I'm not either.
Nope. Staying as close as I can.
We learned a lot.
Yeah. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Did you do... Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Did you do what I did, which is go through Michelle Poehler's 100 Fears, and in your head, just keep a tally of how many you would do or have done? Did you do this?
Yeah.
So it's so funny to me how some people's fears could be another person's heaven.
Right.
For instance, one of Michelle's fears that she overcame was going to a batting cage. So in my head, I'm like, well, why would anyone be afraid to go to a batting cage?
I wouldn't
but then
go
you
in
think
there.
About it. So a ball is being flung at you, you know, at 80 miles an hour. I could see where somebody, I guess, would be afraid of it. But I'd go every day of the year if I had the chance.
But see, now I went as a kid and I wouldn't go now. And that's like roller coasters now.
Oh.
I did these. As I get older, I get more afraid.
Well,
I really do.
Your equilibrium is different as you get older. Like, I'm such a roller coaster fan, but I noticed that things that I could tolerate on a roller coaster 10 or 15 years ago are a little more of a struggle for me now. Like, I don't like when
That's
they
it.
Go upside down now. I used to love that, and now when they go upside down, I get headachy.
I get sick.
Yeah.
I don't like to vomit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to do things where I don't vomit. That's my list.
That's a solid list. What's the one thing on here that under no circumstances would you ever do? Was there one of the 100 that you saw and you just went, oh, good for her, but not for me. I couldn't do that.
I don't think I'd ride a mechanical bull.
I could do that. I wouldn't do it well, but I could do that one. I wouldn't be thrilled with posing naked for an art class. I've been asked 1,000 times, turned them down all 1,000.
Doesn't this relate to Steve Bertrand somehow? The posing for as a model for an art class? Didn't I hear something being said about...
I'm sorry, Wendy, I missed that. What did you say?
Isn't there someone that you know very well who was going to model for an art class?
Well, I told my son he couldn't take the car to college unless he got a job. And so he got back at me by saying he got a job as a nude model for the art class.
Is that real, though? Is he doing that?
Well, it looks like he got a job modeling for the art class. And
so, yes.
The questions were, you know, would you be willing to do nudity? So I don't know if it's going to happen or not. His girlfriend's not altogether pleased with the idea. But
what did you advise him? Did you help
what a
out
great
on this?
Story to have.
It is a great story.
You know,
story.
20 years from now. And I hope he has kids so that I can be the one to tell them.
Would your answer be different if your daughter had the same question for you?
You know, that's a really good question. I've considered that, and maybe it would. I also think, look, it's a college. I don't know how much.
What does that mean?
Well, I don't know what the nudity involves or what the posing. I don't
nude.
Know.
Nude is nude.
Yeah. I suppose.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah. I don't know. I think, but in his case, I think it's just kind of funny.
It is funny, but again...
Because it's a guy. If it was a girl,
if your daughter comes
funny.
To you and says, here's a chance for me to make money, I'll be standing up in front of 30 art students, no clothes
Steve
on.
Steve would go, just take the car to school.
Right.
I'll give you a car.
Yeah. Here's a rental.
Exactly.
Right. That's a tough one.
It would be different. It would be a different calculation. I don't know if that I would automatically say no, but it would be a different thought process.
I would, in so many cases like this, I preface it by saying, the decision is yours. I don't know that I would want you to do it, but it's the ball's in your court. You do what you feel is best.
So you're trying to guilt them into not doing
it? Not guilt them so much as absolve myself of any blame or credit You know, just kind of go, because my daughters are now 21 years old. So
how does
it really
that
is,
feel, by the way?
Oh, it's not good.
I meant to ask
not
you
not good.
I mean, they can do whatever they want.
They're 21. They're adults now. And I have
don't
found
like
myself
that.
In three different occasions in the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about them and I say, my daughters, oh, they're grown now. And as I say that, my head hurts.
Yeah.
Because I go, wait, how did that happen? They
Your
were grown.
Babies are adults.
They're 21. Yeah, they're both 21. I don't know how that
Wow,
happened.
I don't like that.
No, me neither.
They can't be. They have to go backwards.
Right. We're working on a way. We're
All
working
right.
on it. All
don't
right.
worry. They always need your help.
I think you may be onto
but
something there.
At 21, they're bigger problems, right?
Yeah. My youngest is 21 now, so I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
But he just had surgery, and he really needed help.
He's
so
all right?
He's fine.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
Doing good.
All right. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break. Steve has some news for you. Dean Richards will join us in a little bit, and more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Wow, I'm 10 years away.
Tick, 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 tick.
Soon to be 9 years away.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, what is the perfect age?
What is the perfect age?
Have you thought about this at all? The
oh,
Wall Street
no.
Journal put a little article together. I just am wondering what the perfect age is. I've heard people, I like to think my 30s were my best.
Uh-huh.
But then I've heard people that are in their 70s saying, this is the best time of my life because I've figured out what I've done. My kids are grown. I can enjoy myself.
So is Wall Street Journal asking this question as if to say, if you could go back to 1 year of your life?
Or look forward to something.
Oh, right, right, right.
They're just trying to figure. Researchers are studying when we feel our best and why, giving new relevance to the question of the ideal age. What is the perfect age? Are your best years ahead of you or behind you?
Well, all right. So if you go almost era by era or decade by decade, when you're in your 20s, you really feel like it's almost all in front of you. I mean, you've gotten your schooling done, which is nice, but you say to yourself, I'm in my 20s. If everything goes according to plan, I've got 50 or 60 really good years ahead of me.
I partied too much in my 20s.
Oh, you did? Oh.
I think when I hit 35, that to me was like an awesome number.
Yeah.
And I really didn't mind hitting 40 either.
Yeah.
Now I'm over the hill.
Now it's, yeah, the numbers start to pile up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right, right. So if that's the case, even though everything's going well now, your family's healthy, you got a good job, you got a good office.
Got a good partner.
Got a good life, your family's
office.
Fine. I'm just singing Billy Joel lyrics at this point, Wendy. Well, so, but you probably wouldn't pick this period, but only because of the number that's attached to your age, right? I mean, everything's going really well right now, but you probably wouldn't say in my 50s.
I don't know. I really, honestly, I don't care about my age, and I feel like maybe the best is yet to come.
Right. That's the way to do it.
Well, the ideal age is a question that Jay Olshansky thinks about often. He's a doctor. Dr. Olshansky is an epidemiologist. He's researching ways to slow down the process of aging by studying things like genetics and long-lived individuals. If you had a pill that could stop biological aging in its tracks, would you take it? Or when would you take it? Oh, he is a professor at UIC School of Public Health here in Chicago.
That's legit.
He asks his university students this question. Many think 30 is old, so they would take the pill in their 20s. Now, he's at UIC.
All right, so if you're asking college kids that question, they're going to say that.
He asked his father, who was then 95 years old, when would you take this pill, this pill that would stop biological aging in its tracks? And his 95-year-old dad said, I would take it at the age of 50. That was the best year because the kids were grown and he was in good health.
Interesting.
Dr. Olshansky, who's 63, says life is good for him now, but if he had to pick a perfect year, it would probably be 50 also, because that was before he started having little aches and pains.
Yeah. Yeah.
Researchers are trying to understand the mysteries of longevity and at what ages we feel our best and why. They measure worry and stress levels at different times in our life and peak years for having fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think 65 and older is going to be my most fun.
Do you really?
I think I'm going to be playing bingo. I'll have my own marker. I'll have a lot of girlfriends that are at that age. I'll probably be more sociable then than I am now.
In your 60s.
Yep. Going on vacations with my friends.
Interesting.
Maybe their husbands, if any of them are still alive.
Yeah, they'll all be dead.
Yeah, well, women live longer. That's right. Really the case.
Right.
Is that, what's the joke? Because
I'm
men die before much before women because they want to or something like that.
Isn't it strange though? Because I'm thinking like right now, everything in my life is as good as it's ever been. I mean, really, there is no downside to anything going on, and yet I probably wouldn't pick right now.
You'd pick earlier?
I'd pick earlier only because I'd say to myself, if I pick in my 30s, that buys me 20 extra years.
So you're all about the end game. You're worried about when you get to the end. You're not worried about when the true enjoyment is happening. You can't live in the moment.
I think that's mostly true. I'm trying to figure out why that is.
Though,
like, why would I say 35 as opposed to right now? And I think the only reason I could come up with is because it would buy me 15 or 20 extra years.
But you don't know that, though. See, that's the thing. Yeah. You could get hit by a bus walking out in front.
Right.
In your 30s.
Right, right, right.
So you should pick. It is weird, though, because you're like, you know, 100 is the end mark because you want to live to be 100.
Right.
So obviously you'd pick somewhere way far back. But
how about this? Throw this into the equation. I don't remember who said this, but I heard somebody say this a couple months ago. They said, once you pass 50, like every once in a while, you'll get an ache or a pain or something's not working right. And you say to yourself, sometimes it's just for a second, but you say to yourself, is this the thing that's going to do me in? All of a sudden, when I get up, I feel this
chest pain. I have never thought
that
in my life.
Oh, I get it all the time, where I'll just go, is this the, even though it doesn't seem like a big deal right now, is this the thing that will take me eventually? But when you're in your 30s, you know, most people don't think that way.
That would be worrisome.
Oh, this hurts tomorrow I bet it's better. And then it is better.
This hurts when I do this. So in your 30s, you go, I won't do that.
I'm going to stop doing that. But in your 50s, you go, well, I have to do that. That's the only way I can get my shirt on.
Well, researchers have been measuring worry and stress levels at different times in our life and peak years for having fun in the hopes that if people reach satisfaction with life at a certain age, they might have advice for the rest of us.
Yeah.
Such exploration in the world of science and health is putting a more concrete focus on the seemingly inscrutable question of the perfect age. What is the perfect age? Some of their findings might surprise us. Many people in their 50s don't want to be 30. I don't know if I want to be 30 again.
I would go for in my 30s.
You would?
Yeah.
Then you're starting all over again. You have to find a career. You're established now. This is the way to be. This is way better.
I guess.
70-year-olds are among the most satisfied.
Interesting.
Perhaps because...
But would they pick, if you're in your 70s, would you say, I would pick this to be the age, freeze me at 70, I want to be 70? I don't think a lot of people would do that, would they?
I don't know. If 70-year-olds are among the most satisfied, that says something to me.
But it goes back to what I said, which is right now, every gear is in positive for me, and yet I wouldn't pick this age.
Yeah, but again, if it could stop time, then you don't need to go back to your 30s because you're not 70 years away from 100.
So.
You're stopping time here.
Right.
I want to stop time where I'm having the most fun.
Yeah.
And it could be the 70s. So now I'm hopeful. I haven't even reached my fun Wendy yet.
It's coming.
Here's why 70-year-olds are among the most satisfied. Perhaps because they are also among the group seen as time affluent. I don't know what that means. Less surprising is that no one, regardless of age, wants to look or feel old, which is why anti-aging creams that promise to remove wrinkles and eye bags sell so well. But is there an age that is better than all the rest? And they're saying no.
For feeling good physically or for looking good? What
just
is
the perfect
overall?
Age.
Overall?
Yeah, for everything.
A little bit of everything?
Too many variables, according to Stanford Center of Longevity, Laura Karstensen. For some people, the perfect age is when our opportunities are greatest, which would skew younger.
Yeah.
But I don't want to go through that again. It was hard getting established.
No.
Finding someone.
Right.
Getting married was like, I liked my 40s.
Because you were already married. You already had the kids. That stuff was already in place. You didn't have to, struggle with any of that. It was already established.
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense.
For others, it's when life satisfaction is greatest. So then that skews older, like grandchildren.
But wouldn't you, like, I would love to have 10 more years with my daughters are now 21. They turned 21 a few weeks ago. I would love to have 10 more years of them in their kid years.
Oh, not me.
You wouldn't?
I like to change as the time changes. Babies are cute and lovely, and then when they get past, when they got past the baby stage, I was like, I'm kind of done with babies. I don't need any more babies.
Right.
They don't do anything. It's nice you can leave them on the bed; they won't roll off. But
then you get the grandbabies.
Yeah. See, it's all, and that's when they're saying. Other people say the best time of their life is when they're at their physical peak or have the most friends, which is the 20s and 30s. So it depends what's most important to you.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and how you feel health wise too, because a lot of people, you know, they get older. They, you know, I feel the healthiest now that I've ever felt.
Yeah.
So I'm going with my 50s, just because my kids.
Interesting.
My kids have grown.
And
now
they're happy, and they found their way.
I can do now what I want to do as far as hobbies go.
Yeah.
I can travel more if I need to, even though my husband won't. But,
solo trips.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, now I feel like I'm doing stuff I want to do. I can add on to my career if I want, you know, stuff like that. But I don't know. I feel great in my 50s. I'd like to freeze it right now.
Oh, wow.
I'm with Mary.
Yeah, same thing, Kim? Yeah.
There's another soon-to-be grandma.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, and the thing, too, is that I wouldn't want to go any earlier because I want to see that all my hard work with my kids paid off, and I want to see what great kids, people they become.
That is really true. And then, listen, I don't mean to be morbid here, but as we get older, you start thinking, all right, well, at least I know my kids can fend for themselves and they've turned out to be good people.
Yeah.
That's got to be very, very reassuring for you guys.
Definitely.
Well, it is. And the fact now that they're becoming parents, to be able to watch that is unbelievable.
But if somebody said to the two of you when you were in your mid-20s, at some point you're going to be able to freeze your lives, freeze the way you are, neither of you would have thought, well, I'll probably want that in my 50s.
There's no way to see the future. You can't predict.
No.
And then you don't know how great it is having children, and there's just no way to explain that to someone. You know, you always say that old cliche, oh, you won't understand this till you're a parent yourself, but it's so true.
Yeah.
All right, this is a study that was put together by the Wall Street Journal, and they also put some guidelines on the best age to get married. Let's discuss this as we continue. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Wall Street Journal put together a little thing of when do we feel happiest. We've got Kim Gordon, we've got Mary Vandeveld saying the 50s are good because their grandparents, their kids are achieving greatness. They can now kind of do what they want. I hate to say that a lot of the responsibility falls on the mom.
It does, though.
So when the kids are grown,
you can breathe a little.
Yeah, you kind of get your life back.
Right.
My girlfriend Marianne just texted me, 20s were the best year, pre-kids and carefree.
Oh.
And I used to go to Jamaica with her very frequently, and those were really great times.
And you wouldn't freeze yourself at that point in your life?
Yeah, I would, but it's also not as rewarding as having kids and a house.
Of course.
But boy, it was way funner.
It's funny how the kids, it is. The kids play into this a lot,
for me anyway.
I remember, do you know who the writer Calvin Trillin is? Did you ever hear of Calvin Trillin? All right, so he was writing once about his daughters, and he said, if I could freeze my daughters, one of them at the time was 5 and the other was 2. He goes, this is the perfect time. One of them's 5, one of them's 2. And then a couple years later, he went, I was so wrong. It needs to be 8 and 5. Those are the best ages. And then a couple years later, he goes, no, 12 and 9, by far the best. And he said, as they get older and they become, you know, more well-rounded people.
And they become people.
Yeah.
Did he say the same thing about 13 to 15?
No, he left that one out, Kim. He purposely left that one out. Although we never went through, everybody always said with our daughters, I know you like them now, but when they hit 13, they're going to be terrors. And then they weren't.
You had the luckiest life I will ever tell you.
You were lucky, Bill. I was horrible. I was so horrible to my mom.
I was bad to my mom, too. That's why when I look at my teenage boys, I mean, I don't understand how teenage boys, I mean, you can do something so nice for them, and then they'll say something so snippy to you, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And then, like, honest to God, I'd say maybe a half a day later, they'll apologize. But it's like, I don't understand it. And then, honestly, I think back, and really, I was so snippy to my mom. She did so much for me, and nothing was good enough.
Yeah.
I don't know why teenagers suck.
So you're getting the other side of that now.
And I have 15 and 18, so I'm...
But then they come around and appreciate it, so it just takes a while.
And you know what? I will say this. My mom passed away before I had kids, and I wish she was still around so I could go, oh, my God, I am so sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, A, how bad I was, and, two, how hard it is to raise kids. Mm-hmm. It's the hardest thing ever. And this Wall Street Journal put together, like, the perfect age for happiness. They also, another study says the best age to get married between the ages of 28 and 32.
I swear that's exactly what I was going to say about, it's got to be about 30, right?
Well, that was my goal. I was going to get married at 28. I was going to start having kids at 30. I was going to have about 6 or 7 kids.
Doesn't well, always go according
no,
to plan.
No, I didn't find a guy who had a car and a job at the same time till I was 35.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was 36 when I had the first baby and 40 for the second one.
Yeah.
It doesn't always...
The blueprint isn't always the right one.
And that's what I don't like about this, because then if you don't adhere to that schedule between 28 and 32, then you feel like you've failed somehow. You do.
Did you feel that way?
Well, no, but then it's like I'm listening to Kim and Mary talk about being in their 50s and having grandkids, and I am so far away, knock on wood, right, from having grandkids.
Right.
Kids I've graduated from high school with or have been grandparents for a while. I know you said that too.
I see it all the time.
Yeah, but you had more fun in your 20s, and I got married early.
Yeah,
you know?
Me too. I mean, you know what? It all comes out in the wash, you know?
Yeah.
I mean...
Sure.
If you want to have children, it's best to start before the age of 32. Well, yeah, duh, but sometimes we can't.
Think about if that was written in the 50s, and that was the advice, that it's best to have children before the age of 32. If that was written in the 50s...
We'd have a lot of old maids walking around right now.
People wouldn't know what to make of that, because back then it was perfectly acceptable. Everybody was having kids at 21, 22, and 23, sometimes earlier.
Yeah.
It's not until our generation that we figured out late 20s, early 30s perfectly works.
Apparently, 36 is the age that most women want to look based on the photos they bring in. 36 was a perfect year for me.
Yeah?
It's just you're...
Because why? Because
you're more mature than your 20s. You're close to 40, but you're not there yet. It just seems like the perfect time.
Yeah. No way.
No?
No way. I had just had my third child, and I looked
So you'd say later, right, Mary?
I look at pictures back then. It depends on when you had your kids. That's for a woman.
36
anyway.
Was my first kid.
Yeah, so, you know. So
maybe I'd go 35.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
They suck the beauty out of you. That's what they do, those kids.
But you're not supposed
boys.
To tell them
it
that.
It takes 20 years to get it back.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Right.
Now
20.
I feel great again.
You'll be fine. Everything's going to be fine.
My fingers are crossed.
We'll take a quick break. We'll talk to Dean Richards, find out what's going on in the world of movies and entertainment. That's coming up right after the news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
He's Dean, Bill.
Well, you could debate that all day long, but in the end, he is. He's Dean Richards, and he's here, and we love him. Hi, Dean.
Not just Dean.
No.
Dean.
Dean Richards.
As the song goes.
Dean.
Lady. What Dean. A kooky morning we've had here at WGN.
Why do you say
What's
that?
What's going on?
We did an interview with Ricky Martin.
Yeah.
You know,
Loca.
He lives his life. A loco.
Yeah, crazy.
Can I just say, how?
Right, well, you know, we were doing a nice, it's one of these satellite interviews where, you know, he was in New York.
Yeah.
And we had him up on the satellite hookup, and, you know, we're talking to him about, he's in this Johnny Versace American Crime Story.
Oh, right.
That debuted last night.
Yeah.
And having a nice conversation. And Anna Balaval, or as Bill Left likes to call her.
Balalala.
Threatened to murder me
yesterday
if we didn't you know, get her into the conversation because, as Wendy has just indicated a moment ago, Anna has got a lifelong thang.
Oh,
he
really?
Is sexy as all get out.
Right? Yeah. Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
So Anna joins the conversation and, you know, is acting all professional.
She was?
Sure.
At first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking about his work with the island of Puerto Rico and hurricane relief. He's raised over $5 million.
Wow.
And, you know,
tremendous.
She was congratulating him that slid into, if you're going to go back to do any projects, I want to come with you.
Oh, no.
You can stay at my parents' house.
Oh, my God.
Wow, and that's generous.
She went 100% fangirl.
Oh, no.
On Ricky Martin. Complete meltdown on the show today. It was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
So
we already have our number one moment for 2018. We can stop right now.
Did he seem uncomfortable, Dean?
He was delighted. He thought it was funny.
Oh,
He seemed to enjoy it. I would argue that with his eyes, he was blinking to his managers, get a restraining order.
Sure, of course.
it's adorable, and it's up online, WGNTV.com, to just see that, like, pure, she's still, I didn't want her to drive home by herself.
No,
she's still quivering?
She's shaking.
She called
her mother. She gets off the air, calls her mother in Puerto Rico to tell her that I just talked to Ricky Martin. It was so cute.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, adorable.
Good. I'm glad one of her dreams came true. That's beautiful.
Who would that be for you, Bill? Who would that person be for you, Bill and Wendy?
Wendy, does somebody come to mind right away? Somebody that you would just get nuts over meeting?
I love Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I just love him.
But now, you say that, Dean, here's a weird thing. Wendy and I went and met, and we got to meet him. He was shooting a movie here in town years ago, and Wendy remembers none of it.
And we sat at the bar with him.
Yeah,
and
we
stuff?
Hung out with him for 2 hours.
Did I kiss him?
No.
Well, that's why I don't remember.
No.
I love Seth Rogen. I don't know why.
I said the same thing with Tommy Lee Jones.
Did I kiss him?
Yeah.
I guess, Dean, for me, it'd be Red Buttons.
Yeah, I could see that.
Love Red Buttons.
I could see that, where he'd put his hand behind his ear. Who wouldn't get a little excited?
Ho, ho, hee, hee.
Do that crazy Red Buttons dance.
I love that.
Nobody under the age of 70 knows except Bill and me.
Strange things are happening.
Strange things are happening.
That's fun to watch.
Yep,
I used to love that. All right, here's a quick question or two. I'm going to name some people in and around Hollywood who are having interesting weeks. Give me your take on it. Let's start out with James Franco.
James Franco is surprisingly having a fairly good week, considering everything that's happened to him with all the sexual allegations.
Yeah.
Because it's calmed down, and he, while there have been allegations by some people, former students of his, of inappropriate behavior, one of those behaviors is being disputed because it was a date. It was something that one says it was consensual and one does not.
Yeah.
But James Franco feeling comfortable enough to go out in public, he's going to be at the Screen Actors Guild Awards on Sunday. And you would think that somebody who has just had multiple allegations thrown at him, would be laying low, like most of them do. But he's going to be out and walking the red carpet, and not afraid to take questions about it.
Dean, his stance on this was, he said, "I applaud the women who have come forth because their voices need to be heard."
Right.
It was a very, very strange way of handling this. Now, yesterday they said that he was letting people know who he had worked with on the movie that things might get a little stranger. Do you know anything about that?
I had not heard that.
The disaster
artist or the little independent movies that he was making with his
the disaster
former students?
Artist. Just saying, that there could be some stormy weather
that
ahead.
Allegations could be coming up as a result of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hadn't heard anything more about that.
Interesting.
It's going to be interesting to see if he gets any awards.
Right.
Because he was great in the movie.
Yeah.
He's been winning them for all the other award shows, hasn't he?
Yeah, but now all the allegations, since voting has been going on for Screen Actors Guild and the nominations for the Oscars are going to be coming out next week, all of these allegations have been going on while voting is taking place. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's nominated for an Academy Award, if any of the allegations have even affected potential voters' feelings about him.
What do you think will happen when Casey Affleck comes on to award the Best Actress Oscar with all that he's gone through over the last year and a half? There have been so many things that have come to light
right.
since last year. How will he be received, do you think, on Oscar
Day? I think it's going to be really tentative. I think there's going to be some booing.
Yeah, me too.
I do too.
I think it's going to be a moment where, he may decide not to do it at
they
the last
They should scrap him.
Yeah.
Or he should scrap himself.
I think he should scrap himself with it because he's had those kind of allegations also. through the years, and especially given the climate about sexual abuse and allegations this year, how is it appropriate to have somebody who has, you know, been charged with that delivering one of the biggest awards of the night? The
so
best
you
actress
say one. he should scrap himself, which is what Louis C.K. got in trouble for. But you say that's what he should do.
Just okay, Scrappy Doo.
He should just scrap himself.
Yes,
but not as
privately,
not as publicly as Louis
privately.
C.K. did.
That's the way to do
little
it.
Little boys.
All right.
Work
what
with
about
12-year-olds?
What about?
Hey Beavis, he said scrap.
He said scratch. Hey Beavis, he said scratch.
All right, one more, and it's an unpleasant one, and I don't know what to make of this, but more problems for Woody Allen.
Ugh,
right?
Just this. I mean, what's happened mostly this week with Woody Allen, aside from Dylan Farrow, who is doing a whole round of interviews right now.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you know, forever said that she was molested by Woody Allen when he was married to Mia Farrow. But this week, several actors have come forward who were in a movie with him last year, saying that they don't want the salary. They're giving back the salary
for Wonder Wheel. Is that the movie?
Not for Wonder Wheel. It was called a Rainy Day in New York City.
Oh, right. Yeah,
that came out last year.
Yeah,
this Timothy Chalamet, who is in Call Me by Your Name right now, he was in the movie and has donated all of his salary to the, I can't remember if it's Time's Up or Me Too, but he donated it. I think it was Time's Up, the political action group, empowerment group for women. Another actress from the movie has done it, and several actresses and actors who have worked with him while not donating their salaries have made public statements this week saying that they regret working in a Woody Allen movie.
Wow.
Then why did they?
Well, that's my question exactly. And Alec Baldwin actually publicly said this, that, you know, there are a lot of people trying to jump on the anti-Woody Allen bandwagon right now. Did these people not know that there have been, you know, charges and the history of Woody Allen through the years? Is this something that's brand new that nobody's ever heard of? So, you know, Alec Baldwin is crying disingenuous on all those people who are saying, why did you work with Woody Allen? There are plenty of them that are saying that, you know, they want to leave, you know, leave private stuff private and professional stuff professional. But I just don't know how you do that. I mean, you go back and, you know, you can say the same thing about people who have appeared in Roman Polanski movies.
Sure.
Over the past several years, for which there have been, you know, he is living outside the U.S. right now because he can't come back here right now as a result of charges against him.
So a conversation, Dean, that I'm sure you've been a part of, because I've been in this conversation 30 times over the last couple of months, is people say it's hard for us to separate if there's somebody in the business. I use Alfred Hitchcock as the prime example. Alfred Hitchcock was a horrible human being who made great movies. So you say to yourself, what do I do? Do I enjoy those movies or not enjoy those movies?
I've always said that I thought that I could separate, but as it turns out, I really can't.
Yeah,
it really you know, I'm so distracted now watching a Woody Allen movie or an Alfred Hitchcock movie, or when you see actors, you know, I haven't seen a Kevin Spacey movie since all the allegations have come out against him, but I know I won't be able to watch these movies the same way again.
Right.
You know, it's virtually, to me, it's virtually impossible now. So I think, you know, everybody needs to, you know, make their own choice, I suppose, on that. I just don't know how you watch these things in good conscience, knowing the horrible things. I mean, the Alfred Hitchcock kind of nasty was just, he was just not a nice person.
Right.
But when somebody is molesting and taking advantage of people, you know, that's... It's one thing to be a jerk. It's another thing to be a criminal.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very tough. All right. Dean Richards is our guest. We'll discuss which movies are coming out this weekend with him next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We've got Dean Richards with us today. Did your mom have a lovely birthday, Dean?
We're actually going to be celebrating it this coming weekend.
Yay.
At the Sizzler?
People have, people, you know, this flu season.
Yes.
You know, people are sick and they've got the flu and all that. So we decided... Some people were sick last week in the family, so as much as I would have liked to, you know, it just ignored them. we decided to do it this weekend. So yeah, we're going to. I'm hoping we can get in Sizzler.
Oh, that'll be nice.
I'm hoping. I love
get the hibachi chicken. You will thank
oh,
me.
Oh, that
later.
Was good.
So good.
I haven't had that in a long
oh,
time.
Is that
if,
good?
If not, usually you can get a fairly big party into an IHOP anytime.
Oh yeah, anytime.
A little sticky.
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Hey, Beavis. That's sticky.
Oh, my God.
What?
Jeez, Dean.
Dean Richards is here. He's pretending he's Beavis, but he's not. He's Dean Richards.
Was,
Dean.
Is that Beavis tell. Or Butthead?
Yeah, that was Butthead.
Was that Butthead?
Yeah. The more,
that's Butthead. The no, more, that's Beavis. That's Beavis. The blonde one's Beavis.
Oh, yeah.
The blonde one.
The more...
the hot one.
No, neither are very hot.
The more studious of the two. What is 12 Strong? Is that the Chris Hemsworth movie, Dean? What
it
is that?
Yes, it is. It's a war movie. It's a true story about the first military unit to go into Afghanistan immediately following September 11th, like just a few days after September 11th. And it's 12 guys, Special Forces soldiers, who are going in, working with an Afghan warlord to try to defeat Al-Qaeda in this area. And the only way they can do it is on horseback in the very rugged terrain of Afghanistan. Most of the people in this unit were not horse people, so they had to learn to ride horses and learn to ride and control horses in this very difficult setting. It's a very interesting story. I find just the whole story very interesting because I didn't really know about these 12 soldiers that had to go and do this and were very successful in weakening Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Good performances here, well shot, nicely done film. The biggest thing that it brought back for me was, do you remember right after 9/11, this super patriotism that everybody felt?
Absolutely,
and how
yeah.
Every single house on the block had a flag.
Yeah.
Everybody was wearing, lapel pins and, doing whatever they could to support the soldiers who were trying to figure out what happened at that point. That's one of the most successful things I think this movie brings out. So I liked it. I gave it a Dean's List B.
Oh, good. Very, very good. And I know it's a true story. I just saw Chris Hemsworth and the man he portrays in the movie were together during one of the playoff games, the football games over the weekend. It looks like a good movie. I'm looking forward to it.
I did not know that one of the guys in this special unit was also one of the Avengers.
Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. How about that? That's an advantage if you have one of the Avengers.
If you're
good one,
to
Beavis.
War,
squadron.
If you're going to war, you want a mighty Thor on
at
your side.
At least one Avenger. Yes. Absolutely.
Avenger.
Right. Avenger.
Avenger.
What about Forever My Girl? Who is this?
This is nobody of consequence.
Oh.
Ouch.
I actually forget the name of the actors that are in the movie. They're not. They're
Alex Rowe and Jessica Roth.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
They're in it.
They are two up-and-coming actors. That
sound like it.
alleged actors, I guess I should say. This would be how January is usually the dumping ground for the worst movies of the year.
Yeah.
This movie would be an example of
is
that.
Is it that bad? Yeah,
it's pretty awful. It's I don't want to insult the Lifetime Channel by saying that this should have been a Lifetime Channel movie, one of these empty romance dramas, because this movie is that bad. It's about a guy, a young man, who literally leaves his fiance at the altar because he decides that he wants to follow his dreams of being a country music star.
We've all been there.
Flash forward 8 years later when he is apparently one of the biggest stars in country music, but is tormented. He learns that one of his friends from his hometown has passed away. He goes home for the funeral. And is not overly welcomed by everybody because of what he did to his fiance. So he he's trying to work a relationship with his fiance and explain what he's done. There are all kinds of surprises that happen along the way, but this story is so badly written, and I actually laughed out loud a couple of times.
And you weren't supposed to?
How over the top the performances were so bad.
Oh, no.
It's like if the three of us decided to make a movie right this second.
Right. It was like that.
That's what the acting would be like.
Are there any... the story sounded kind of interesting to me.
You had Wendy with the story,
Dean. You kind of did.
Were there any Avengers in this movie at all?
Not one.
None?
Not one. It wouldn't have been a terrible idea when he comes back to town if the Hulk is right. running the general store.
That would have been a fun thing.
In the small town in Louisiana where he's from.
What is Dean's list?
Dean's
on
list,
this?
D-.
Oh, that's horrible.
I don't know why I didn't want to pull the plug completely and just go F.
That's awful.
I guess I gave it a little. Travis Tritt is in the movie, and he does like a half of one song, which I kind of enjoyed.
Shit happens, Dean, you know that.
Oh, boy.
It's a bit, hey, Beavis, he said.
Hey, is 50 Cent in a movie?
50 Cent is in a movie.
He is?
This week. He is in the movie that's called Den of Thieves. He is in a movie with Gerard Butler, with Pablo Schreiber, who is in Orange is the New Black. He is Liev Schreiber's brother.
Oh.
O'Shea Jackson Jr., who is... Ice Cube's son was in Straight Outta Compton. They are all in this movie, which is a cops and robber heist movie. A bunch of super military trained bad guys decide that they're going to be the first ones ever to break into the Federal Reserve and make off with millions of dollars. There is a group of LA cops. These are not just cops. These are cops who are unafraid to break the rules.
The best kind, Dean.
They'll do anything to get their man.
Are they renegade cops? They sound like renegade cops.
They are renegade cops who aren't afraid to break the rules.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's good guys, bad guys heist movie, which is extremely, extremely routine. Really, they could have easily shaved a half an hour off of this movie to keep the excitement a little more compact. It's a little bit sloppy. I give it a Dean's List C+ because there is a pretty great ending.
Oh.
But you do have to wait 2 hours and 20 minutes to get
that's
to
too
it.
Long. Oh.
Dean, you had me at Liev Schreiber's brother. As soon as you said Liev Schreiber's brother, I said, I'm seeing this
movie. I know you're a big fan of anyone named Pablo.
Yes. Yes. Well, it sounds like there's something for everybody to miss this week, doesn't it, Dean?
Pretty much. Yeah. This 12 Strong movie is pretty good.
All right. That's a good one.
I'll give it that, and there are all kinds of Oscar movies that you should
still
be catching up on right now. Right?
Perfect. Dean, great to talk to you again.
Dean.
Have a great weekend.
Happy birthday, Mom.
See you guys.
Bye, Dean.
That fucks.
Wow. That's Dean Richards, everybody. We'll find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's a minute away. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.